before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst. Cleanse your palate before you quench your thirst.
Hello and welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm your host, Bill Howell, and as always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. We've got a lot of great stuff for you this month, so let's get started with beer news. Tickets are now on sale for the Alaska Craft Brew and Barley Wine Festival. It will be at the Denina Center in Anchorage on Friday, January 31st, and Saturday, February 1st. As usual, there will be three sessions, Friday evening from 6 to 10 p.m., Saturday afternoon from noon to 4 p.m., and Saturday evening from 6 to 10 p.m. Tickets are available from My Alaska Tix. General admission tickets are $75 and designated driver tickets are $10. Each session will feature a different live band. The winners of the commercial competition in the barley wine and winter warmer categories will be announced during the Saturday afternoon session. During the recent European Beer Star competition, two different breweries from Alaska took home medals. Since 2004, the European Beer Star has honored authentic, high-quality beers with exceptional character. Open to breweries worldwide, the competition features 75 categories judged by sensory criteria, including appearance, aroma, and taste. Recognized as one of the most prestigious global beer competitions, the European Beer Star celebrates excellence in brewing craftsmanship. Alaskan Brewing took home three medals this year. Gold for its smoked porter in the smoked beer category, bronze for its amber in the red ale category, and bronze for its wildness Alaskan cold beer in the English-style golden ale category. 49th State Brewing Company took a silver medal in the smoked beer category with its smoke Marzen, and a bronze in the stout category for its Nitro McCarthy Stout. These achievements come after a rigorous blind tasting by an international jury of over 150 beer experts. Competing against more than 2,300 entries from over 50 countries, the recognition of these breweries at one of the world's most prestigious beer competitions underscores their dedication to quality and innovation. Glacier Brewhouse in Anchorage held its annual 12 Days of Barley Wine from December 9th through December 20th. Each day featured different barley wines and imperial stouts on offer, all of them barrel-aged and some cask-conditioned. This event highlights the diversity of brews that barrel aging can produce. On Sunday, December 15th, King Street Brewing in Anchorage held its annual chestnut roast at the brewery. There were fresh, fire-roasted chestnuts, winter-themed food specials, hot chocolate, mulled wine, and spiced cider, as well as beers on tap, including their chocolate coconut porter and oak-aged winter warmer. The Brewers Association has released its 2024 Year in Beer report. Here are some highlights. The number of small and independent breweries in operation in the U.S. in 2024 totaled 9,736. Throughout the year, the Brewers Association has tracked 335 new brewery openings and 399 closings. Despite the slight decline in the number of breweries in operation, closings remain a low percentage of total operating breweries. The craft beer industry supported nearly 460,000 jobs nationwide, fostering local economies and creating opportunities. Craft beer's contribution to the U.S. economy reached an impressive $77.1 billion, demonstrating its vital role in the broader beverage market. That's it for beer news this month. Up next, we'll have an interview with Jake Walgenbach of Naptown Brewing in Sterling. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Jake Walgenbach, the owner slash founder slash brewer of Naptown Brewing in Sterling. Jake, how are you today, sir?
Doing well, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us. So first up, congratulations on your medals that you won at Alaska Beer Awards last month.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that was a nice surprise.
Glad to see you took that gold medal for your Braveheart Scotch Ale. That's always been a particular favorite of mine. So what's up at the brewery there in Sterling?
Oh, now we're in holiday mode right now. Just have several events trying to get, you know, things out there for folks to do throughout the winter. So we're keeping our weekends pretty packed with different things, from, you know, cooking, making, to paint and sips, and just at a Christmas party and things like that. Releasing some new beers, about one or two every weekend at this rate, which winter time's a good time to be bringing new releases to folks.
I stopped by and had some of your new barley wine, the Heathen, right?
That's right.
That's quite good. Quite good.
Yeah, thank you. So we end up getting a whiskey barrel from a distillery down in North Carolina, and so we put half that batch in a barrel. So yeah, look forward to that. And well, over a year, it'll be a little bit. But yeah, so we've got a good little mini barrel aging program going on, as much as you can do with a system our size. So next year we should have probably three barrel age releases spread out throughout the year. And I'd like to keep that kind of a, you know, consistent pattern for us.
Are you planning to enter anything into the barley wine composition next month?
You know, probably not, Bill, unfortunately. So, you know, we do the Frozen River Fest in February, which is, you know, pretty close to, you know, the beer and barley wine. So because of our limitations, we're kind of focused on the Frozen River Fest and really can't do both of them at this time.
Well, of the two, I'm happy you're doing the Frozen River Fest.
That's yeah, you good. Bet. You know, if it's a local thing, it's really good what they're doing there. And yeah, we're happy to be a part of that.
So what other new releases have you got coming out here in the near future?
You know, I got a Helles Lager coming out, actually. So that's going to be fun. And a new West Coast double IPA is coming out. And then I've got a couple new hazies coming up. They'll probably be spread out through the following couple weeks there. And a rhubarb saison will be coming up in like 2-3 weeks.
Okay. Have you guys gotten any further along on your expansion plans? I know you were talking about various things, but have you made any further decisions or anything?
Yeah, we know what we're going to do now, which that was half the battle, right? You know, do you add on, do you build a separate building on location? So we are going to do the latter. We're going to build a second building on location. So that's another focus of ours this winter, is trying to get things lined up for that. You know, obviously there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of planning and permitting for that. So it's going to be a lengthy process, but it's definitely our top priority right now.
So I assume it's going to be over on the other side of the parking lot, sort of in the direction of Sterling Tool, right?
Yep, exactly. That's exactly okay. Where it's going to be. Yep.
What size system are you looking at to go with in there?
In talks with a group right now on a 5-barrel. If that works out, that'll be what we go with. If not, if I need to, you know, if we're looking elsewhere, then we might go a little bit bigger, maybe a 7. Now, nothing over a 10, because we're going to, you know, stick to our kind of pub style, you know, event-based model with the licensing that we have, that it enables us to do that. And that's kind of what we'd like to do. Of course, with that, we'll get a canning machine and, have to-go options and maybe support a couple local, bars and liquor stores and things like that with some to-go options.
I know these things are always just like throwing a dart at a dartboard, but what you think your timeline might be, like building this summer?
I'd like to get, a footprint in, do some civil work by before next winter. And I'm sure the bulk of this project's going to take place that following summer.
Okay. So let's talk some more about your beers that won awards. I already mentioned Braveheart. Why don't you tell folks about the other three that took home medals?
Yeah, so let's see. We got three other bronze medals, and one of them was our blueberry Saison, which was pretty neat. That was a locally picked blueberries that went into that Saison. Pretty happy with how that turned out. The other was our seasonal, we call it like a holiday brown. It goes by the name of Old Man Marley. So that's one that we're keeping on. It's actually off tap now, but it'll be on tap again next weekend. That's a fun one. We do toasted coconut, molasses, and then a combination of different spices and then some vanilla extract that we make in-house here. So that's a local favorite in the wintertime. And let's see, our third is our Belgian Devil. Yeah, that's a fun one. We use an Abbey strain, so a little bit different, not a traditional, Belgian yeast strain. That's a long fermenting, long flocculating yeast strain. A lot of banana esters and things like that in it, banana and clove. So it's a pretty neat one that we do, and it seems to do well for us.
Good. So you guys are currently open 4 days a week, right?
Yep, currently open four, and the reason being is the other 3 days are, back-to-back brew days,
right.
And we brew in the basement, and it gets pretty, we get some negative pressure down there, and it gets pretty condensated, so basically, long story short, we can't be open while we brew, so until we get a separate building, it's going to have to stay those 4 days.
Well, brewing on that small system, like I said, you will appreciate if you can step up to a 5 or 7 or something else.
No, absolutely. It might feel like a part-time job by then.
So let's talk some more about the events you've got scheduled.
Yeah, so we have a couple locals that are, that are going to be repeating events. So the paint and sips are going to be a continued thing through the winter for us. We recently did an art show, which is pretty common in breweries. We're going to continue that. That's a pretty fun thing to do, pretty fun collaboration. We've got a couple more, like cookie and different candy making and decorating classes coming up. And yeah, just everything we can do indoors, until the snow, we don't even have snow, but till the snow melts and we can make use of our beer garden. So Which brings me to another thing. So we just got our stage built. So we're currently, booking acts, music acts for next year. So stay tuned for that. One of our owners, Rory. So he's one of the owners here. He's a very handy guy. He actually built it himself. And if you haven't checked it out, come take a look. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I've seen it driving by. It looks really nice. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys have a full beverage dispensary license, right? So you can do any kind of entertaining you want.
Yep, that's right. Yep, which that's kind of what we jumped on it when we had the opportunity, knowing, we wanted to do the kind of the pub style, bring people here type of thing, entertain them.
Well, cool. That should be great. Like you say, now that you've got a stage there, I look forward to seeing all your outdoor events and music and things like that. That's going to be a big draw for you during the summer, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And then, it gives people something to do. And, Sterling is such a great community. So the locals have been, just outstanding and very supportive of us. So it's nice to, present, something back that the community, for the community that they can do.
Well, great. Anything else you want to share?
I think we covered it, Bill. Nothing pops out of my head.
Okay. Well, hey, Jake, I know you're busy brewing over there. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us, and I do appreciate it. If I don't see you before, have a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, and I'll see you at the Frozen River Fest.
Great. Same to you, Bill. Thank you. Happy holidays.
All righty. Happy holidays. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment. This month's feature deals with succession planning. One of the things we must all deal with eventually is our own mortality. No one and nothing in this world lasts forever. That's true for the mountains, and it's true for craft breweries as well. The craft brewing industry in this country really took off in the 1980s, which means many of the famous names in craft brewing have been at it for almost 40 years now. Our own Alaskan Brewing Company opened for business in 1986. As the founders of these companies begin to become folks of a certain age, planning for succession becomes more and more critical. As with any business, there are a range of options. If the craft brewer is lucky enough to have children who are old enough and interested in running the brewery, then keeping the business in the family may be the simplest option. Notice I said simplest, not simple. A stumbling block for the owners of many closely held businesses is the desire to treat children equally. Treating children fairly is not the same thing as treating them equally, and in the close-held business context, fair treatment is the recommended course. Some children may be interested in the brewery while others are not. Deciding how to handle property divisions, leadership structures, and the ensuing family dynamics may not be simple at all. Sierra Nevada Brewing Company seems to be an excellent example of a successful family succession. Founder Kevin Grossman's son, Brian, has assumed more and more responsibility for operating the business. Brian described his childhood as follows, quote, "Growing up with the brewery, it felt like Sierra Nevada was a sibling. I've got two sisters, the brewery, and me. As you grow up and get more involved and you get more responsibilities all of a sudden, it was really weird. But Sierra Nevada went from a sibling to a child of mine. We have almost 1,200 people that we work with every day, and those 1,200 people are dependent upon not just great beer, but sound business decisions." Another example would be Yuengling, the oldest operating brewery in the country, which has been owned by five generations of the same family. But what if the brewer either has no children or none of them are interested in continuing the brewery? In that case, the brewery will have to be sold. Options for sale include selling to competitors or strategic buyers, including another craft brewer, a buyout by key management personnel, an employee stock ownership plan, or ESOP, selling to a group of local investors, or even the dreaded sale to a non-craft brewer like AB InBev or Heineken. In many cases, a sale does not have to be an all-or-nothing proposition and can, in fact, be a combination of these strategies. Let's take a look at each of them in turn. The first option, selling to a competitor or a strategic buyer, is fairly straightforward. Here in Alaska in 2016, after 20 years of operation, the Snow Goose Pub and Sleeping Lady Brewing Company was sold by its owner, Gary Klopfer, to 49th State Brewing Company. Gary was ready to retire from the day-to-day grind of running a business and had no family interested in taking over. 49th State Brewing needed to expand its operations and wanted to do so in Anchorage rather than in its original Healy location. With a willing buyer and a motivated seller, this match was made in business heaven. While Snow Goose Sleeping Lady may no longer exist, its location and brewing equipment are busier than ever, and even some of its signature brews continue to be produced by 49th State Brewing. So sometimes selling out to another craft brewer can be an excellent option. A buyout by key management is also often an excellent option. After all, who knows the operation of a business better than the people who are currently running it? If the individuals currently managing a brewery and brewing your beer can put together a sound plan and borrow the capital to buy out the owner/founder, this can be another win-win scenario. There are potential pitfalls, of course. Unless they happen to have independent means, the purchasers will have to borrow the money to buy the business. Like any leveraged buyout, this means the brewery is going to have to expand and remain profitable to generate the revenue necessary to pay off the loans used to purchase it. The news is filled with reports every day of companies declaring bankruptcy because they could not generate the sales needed to service their debts. Still, if the underlying business is in good shape, a management buyout can certainly be successful. Another type of buyout that has been popular recently is the Employee Stock Ownership Plan, or ESOP. An ESOP is an employee owner program that provides a company's workforce with an ownership interest in the company. In an ESOP, the company provides their employees with stock ownership, often at no upfront cost to the employees. ESOP shares, however, are part of the employee's remuneration for work performed. Shares are allocated to employees and may be held in an ESOP trust until the employee retires or leaves the company. The shares are then bought back by the company for redistribution or voided. Perhaps the most famous ESOP in craft brewing world is that of New Belgian Brewing, the makers of the iconic Fat Tire Amber Ale. But some Alaska breweries have ESOPs, including the Denali Brewing and Alaskan Brewing Companies. In 2000, with a workforce of 90 employees, New Belgium officially transitioned to an ESOP. The new ESOP purchased 32% of the total shares from the company's founders. In 2012, owner-founder Kim Jordan sold the remaining shares belonging to her, her two sons, and the management to the ESOP, making New Belgium officially 100% employee-owned. Jordan announced the sale to more than 450 thrilled employees at New Belgium's annual company retreat in January 2013. Though the sale signified a huge shift on paper, Jordan said, quote, "Nothing changed because we had this culture that we call high involvement culture, deeply embedded within the organization for a very, very long time." That sets New Belgium apart from other iconic craft breweries such as Dogfish Head and Lagunitas, who have sold stakes to outside investors. Jordan's sale to the ESOP represents a conscious effort to fight the wealth gap, avoid cuts and layoffs a buyer might have demanded, and keep her employees involved in the future of the company. While the New Belgium ESOP was widely hailed in the craft beer world, not every ESOP has been so successful. Full Sail Brewing Company was one of the pioneers in the craft brewing industry. In 2014, it was the 25th largest craft brewer in the country. In 1999, the company moved into an ESOP rather than be put up for sale. In early 2015, 58% of the company was employee-owned and 42% was still owned by the founders, Jamie Emerson and Irene Format. In March of that year, the employees voted nearly unanimously to accept a buyout offer from the Oregon Craft Brewers Company, a local investment group formed by Encore Consumer Capital, a San Francisco-based private equity firm. It's estimated the employees likely earned 4 to 5 figures in the buyout, as well as keeping their jobs. The bad news is that brewery sales to private equity firms might have a worse track record than those sold to brewing giants like SAB Miller and Anheuser-Busch. While those companies' businesses is at least making and selling beer, equity firms will quickly sell off companies to make a buck and have no interest in continuing their products. In the case of Full Sail, things seem to have worked out better than average since the company is still owned by Encore Consumer Capital and is still operating as of today. Speaking of the brewing giants, they also represent a potential option. However, unless a craft brewer is very lucky, it's unlikely that AB InBev will come knocking on their door just when they are ready to retire. That's reported to have been the case with Goose Island Brewery's sale in 2011, but later purchases by the company's high-end division seem to be focused on relatively new and up-and-coming breweries rather than established ones looking to transition. Additionally, these days the big guys seem more interested in divesting craft breweries than in acquiring them. The bottom line is that there is no single surefire way to ensure that a craft brewery will continue to operate successfully for several generations. Each plan for dealing with succession comes with a history of both successes and failures. In the meantime, those of us who love to enjoy craft beer should remember the advice of the poet Horace. Seize the day, trusting as little as possible in the future. Support your favorite breweries, drink as much of their beer as you can today, for who knows what tomorrow will bring, either for us or for them. Up next, we'll have an interview with Bobby Wilkin of Fairbanks-based Hoodoo Brewing Company. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Next, Bobby Wilkin, the founder of Hoodoo Brewing Company in Fairbanks. Bobby, how are you doing this fine day, sir?
I'm doing great. Doing fantastic.
Well, thanks for taking the time out to chat with us. So what's new in the zoo? You guys are getting ready probably for your big solstice release, right? Don't you do one every winter solstice?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, we actually just got done bottling it. So we bottled 400 bottles, and we got about five barrels of keg beer for the tap room and, you know, beer festivals and things. But it's a barrel aged imperial stout. It's actually a blend of two imperial stouts and then aged in Widow Jane bourbon barrels and some Desert Door Sodal barrels and blended together, and tastes awesome. I think it's about 12%, somewhere around there.
Sounds delicious.
Turned out great. So that'll go on sale on winter solstice. It's called 3:41 because that's the length of the day up here in Fairbanks on winter solstice, 3 hours and 41 minutes. And then we do the summer solstice beer. That's the 21:49. That's the length of the day up here on summer solstice. So yeah, it's kind of a fun project every year.
Cool. Well, I'll be looking for it when it makes its way down to La Bodega in Anchorage, I'm sure.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll try and get some down when we come down for Barley Wine Fest.
So let's talk about the Barley Wine Fest. You guys going to put an entry in this year?
Yeah, I think so. We barrel-aged our barley wine this year. We haven't tasted it in a couple months, but it was tasting real good a couple months ago. And we kind of have the same base recipe and just do a little tweaks here and there every year just for fun. And this year's will be a Quebec yeast. And we've been trying to kind of, our early ones were around maybe 8% alcohol, just kind of nice, light, kind of easy drinking barley wines. And then we've kind of been bumping up in probably the past 5 or 6 years. And I think we were at about 15% last year. And I think this will be right around the same, but try and keep them, you know, English barley wine, you know, focused on that just rich flavor. And the barrel age is, it just adds another dimension. So we've really enjoyed doing that. And pretty excited about it.
Yeah, the Quebec works with that high alcohol. I hadn't heard that about that yeast. I'd heard it was,
it does.
Warm temperatures and everything. It was really good for that, but it's good for alcohol tolerance as well, huh?
Yeah, there's a couple strains that are, we fermented at 95 degrees, and which seems crazy. Yeah. And then there's a couple strains that are pretty high alcohol tolerant, and we tried it one time before 2 years ago, and it worked great. So then threw it into this one too. So yeah, it works great.
Cool.
And it tastes great too.
So. Yeah, I'll be interested to try it at the festival. So what else is new up there? You guys, have you made any equipment changes or anything in the last few months? And add anything?
Not really any equipment changes. We're working on getting a beverage dispensary license just to kind of open up our creativity up here. So that's been all approved by the city and the state and stuff. So we're just kind of waiting on the final paperwork. But then we're not planning on becoming a bar or anything like that. But it'll just allow us to do events. You know, we do some events now. We're gonna have to go around the regulations a little bit and contract with other people to help us make them happen, but we'll just be able to do those a little more easily. And so we're pretty excited about that, just to kind of open up some possibilities,
just doing entertainment and stuff like that. I know that's gonna make
difference. It'll make a big difference. We're not, like I said, we're not planning on any monumental changes or anything, but it'll they'll just allow us, you know, we're so used to just going, oh, no, we can't do that and can't do that, can't do that. But it'll just allow us to kind of consider fun ideas and fun little events and big events and things like that. So we're pretty excited about it.
Wow, that's great. I'm sure Fairbanks is over-issued. So whose license did you get?
We got a Goldie's license. Goldie's was a bar downtown, and they focused on, you know, their main deal was really outside events. So they would go around and do concerts. You know, they could permit your party or your wedding, or they'll do curling tournaments. And just their focus was as a mobile bar. But in Alaska, you have to have a bar. So they had a bar downtown that was just really, really cool. But that wasn't really their passion. It was kind of the mobile bar thing. So they just kind of decided to hang it up and just kind of try and think of another way to do their business model without having to run a bar. So anyways, it kind of worked out great for them, and it worked out great for us. Just kind of, you know, we're not trying to revolutionize anything, but just kind of an incremental change. And then for them, they can still run their business in kind of a different way, I think. But yeah, Goldie's was a really cool bar downtown. If anybody ever got a chance to go there, they were really only open for probably 5 years or something like that. But it was a really, really cool space. And they had an Airstream inside, and that was the bar. And it was a really, really neat concept. But alas, that's whose license we got.
Well, that's was kind of the whole idea behind some of these recent changes was, can we figure out a little smarter ways to do things? I think, anyway, at least that was the theory, right?
Yeah, I think it makes it a little easier to do exactly what we're doing. And if you want to do those things, you know, you just got to find yourself a license, and then you can go for it. You know, it makes it a little less of the running around the lot. It makes it more simple in that way, which is good.
So I'm sure your beer garden's probably shut down now, but I assume you guys are going to continue to do the stuff.
You know, it's not shut down. You know, we actually keep it all the snow out of it. Okay. We just got about a foot of snow about a week ago, and so we get the whole crew out there snow blowing and get it all out of there. And we have two fire pits that are just rolling anytime we're open, and there's always people around the fire. It's about 10 below today, and we're about to open at 3 o'clock, and there's definitely going to be some people that are out by the fire. Usually it's the people that are, you know, working outside in their trade, whatever they do. Right. They'll just grab a beer because they're already geared up, and they'll just head back outside and stand around the fire really until it's about maybe 25 or 30 below, then pretty much everybody's inside.
What I was going to ask you about is the food trucks. I'm sure they're not there this time of year, are they?
Yeah, they're kind of cut off is about 10 below. Most of them just say we can't make it, but we've been working with them to kind of create a space inside the tap room and kind of in the corner where they can just have some simple snacks for food, and that's really working out well. So if it's too cold, or if their truck breaks or something like that, then they can just kind of simplify their menu and just set up in the corner, and it works out really well. So we generally have food every day, which is really awesome, and a rotating menu, and the food trucks appreciate it too, because then they aren't so reliant on their vehicle functioning at 20 below. So kind of everybody wins, so it's really great.
Well, you mentioned the festival in Anchorage. Any chance you're going to be at the Frozen River Fest in February down here?
It's definitely on the hopefully list. Yeah, I think we'd like to make it. I know we're pretty sporadic on that one. It's been too long since I've been down there, so I know it's on the short list. Yeah.
Well,
so
he's talking about standing around the fire pits at 10 below. That's that's pretty much the Frozen River Fest, though. It might be 10 above instead of 10 below, but same.
Yeah. Yeah, and watching the live music, and all I think about is how they're playing a guitar in the cold. I don't really know, but yeah, we'd love to make it down there. Hopefully we can do it this year.
So besides the barley wine and the Imperial Stout you talked about, you got any other interesting new releases coming out in the semi-near future?
Well, we've done some testing on our hop water. We have some test batches that we've done throughout the past probably 6 months or so. We're really hoping to can that this summer, when the heat of the summer hits. It feels like forever away, but it's right around the corner. So we'd really like to do that this summer if we can pull it off. Right now we don't have any Belgian beers on, so we're trying to devise a good kind of spring. I love Belgian beers in the spring, you know, kind of saisons, wit beers, things like that. So we're going to try and trying to balance our kind of IPAs, dark beers. We have, you know, our Kolsch and Helles right now, great light beers. And then, but we need to spice it up a little with some Belgian beers. Those are coming down the pike, but we're trying to keep a couple lagers going at a time, you know. So like I said, we have our Helles on right now. That'll probably be on for the next few months. That's tasting awesome. And I think next in line will either be a Schwartz beer or a Rauch beer, which we haven't done in a couple of years, our smoked lager. And we have a few, you know, diehard fans that are just asking for it all the time. So we'll probably get that on the menu pretty soon.
A good smoked lager is a joy to taste. I was, just the other night, I was having one of the smoked box from Bamberg. Had a bottle of that. Oh, yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, I can't get enough of that. The Schlenkerla, I love it.
Yeah. All of theirs are good, but I really like the Bock. And the Marzen is really good, too, but I really like the Bock.
That's kind of my favorite. I don't know if you've had the they have a Helles, Schlenkerla Helles, and they actually don't use any smoked grain in it, but they repitch the yeast from the other beers into this light lager.
Yeah.
And the yeast has this smoky flavor. So it's a great Helles with just a light smokiness from the yeast. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I've never had that. So, I think I've had their Wiesen and their Marzen and their Bock. I don't think I've had a Helles from them. So I'll have to give it a shot. I'll have to keep an eye out for it if we ever see any around here.
Yeah, so. I haven't seen it much, but it's around every once in a while. So.
All right, I'll keep an eye out for it. Anything else that you want to let our folks know about?
Not too much. We're kind of with the Frozen River Fest. We're trying to hoping this year to get around to a few more festivals. They're always a little more trying than it seems. One of our staff members is kind of taking on organizing our kind of events and festivals. And he's kind of pretty gung-ho about getting out to more of them this year, which we all would love to do. It just takes a little bit of organization. So hopefully we'll be able to spread it out a little bit more and get out there and, you know, travel around the great state of Alaska and maybe beyond and share the beer. But other than that, it's just, you know, we're just keeping warm and trying not to run out of beer.
Well, sounds good, Bobby. So, hey, man, thanks for taking the time to talk to us, and I'll see you in Anchorage next month.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bill.
All righty. Thank you. Have a good one. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment. It's deep, dark wintertime here in Alaska, so this seems like an opportune time to take another look at barley wines in our beer style segment. Barley wine is the strongest style of beer, and while it isn't always literally as strong as wine, it typically is stronger than beers in the style referred to as strong or old. The first beers we now think of as barley wine sprang from the British farmhouse brewing tradition, with its origins in the mid to late 18th century in breweries attached to the aristocratic great houses of England. At first, such beers were too expensive to produce on a commercial basis. Using new techniques to produce pale malt, these breweries began to brew these beers exclusively for the use of these wealthy households. These beers would be aged in wood for a year or more before serving and were brewed, quote, "to answer the like purpose of wine," end quote, at the table. This was considered important in the days when frequent warfare between England and the wine-producing countries to the south could interrupt wine supplies for extended periods of time. In 1854, Bass began production of a barley wine they simply called Number One, its label adorned with a single red diamond. This diamond was registered as Britain's second trademark, following the still familiar Bass Ale Red Triangle. Bass No. 1 was brewed continuously, except for a 10-year break from 1944 to 1954, for 141 years until its discontinuation in 1995. It remains the standard, though sadly today only in memory, against which other British barley wines are measured. But while the heritage of British-style barley wines is long and distinguished, they are not the only interpretations of this classic style. While its roots are in British traditions, barley wine as a style has enjoyed a substantial second flowering among American craft brewers, beginning with the production of Old Foghorn Ale by Anchor Brewing Company in 1975, followed shortly afterwards by Sierra Nevada Brewing's Bigfoot. For brewers, barley wine is a difficult and expensive beer to produce, requiring great amounts of material, procedural vigilance, and time, which is the fifth vital element, along with malt, hops, water, and yeast, needed to produce a great barley wine. Like its earlier cousins, old and strong ales, barley wine is intended to be laid down, the fortitude of its flavors sometimes requiring a year or more to mellow into an enjoyable integration. Some versions, such as the legendary Thomas Hardy Ale, can be cellared for 25 years or more. What do they taste like? Barley wines in the British tradition are typically malt-forward, tasting slightly sweet with plenty of vinous and woody notes. American-style barley wines typically have a much greater hop presence. However, just because a barley wine is produced by an American brewery does not mean it will be in the American style. Plenty of American craft breweries produce English-style barley wines. Either style may be barrel-aged. If the barrels used previously held some other spirit, that will bring added complexity to the flavor profile. Both styles have great strengths, ranging from 8% alcohol by volume to greater than 18%. This high strength often means they will be served in smaller glasses. Additionally, some breweries are now producing Belgian-style barley wines. The name is a bit of a misnomer, since Belgium has no history of brewing barley wine. However, if you brew a barley wine with a Belgian yeast, you have to call it something, hence the name. What foods do they pair well with? The traditional match for an English barley wine is aged Stilton blue cheese, as the strong flavor of the cheese can stand up to the equally strong beer. Another choice might be a bread pudding, especially one with a sauce that utilizes whiskey or rum as its base. American barley wines are more bitter, so they might pair better with a slightly less assertive cheese, say a good cheddar, one aged for at least a year. Or try them with a steak or burger that has blue cheese crumbled on it. Finally, they make a wonderful pairing with fruitcake. Yes, it may not be widely known, but it's true. You can actually eat fruitcake, and I'm sure a nice glass of barley wine would make it even more palatable. If you'd like to try a local version of this beer style, there are many to choose from. You might find a few 22-ounce bottles of the sadly defunct Cassock's Brewery's Buffalo Head Barley Wine. Midnight Sun Brewing in Anchorage offers both its English-style Arctic Devil barley wine and its Belgian-style Termination Dust barley wine in 12-ounce bottles. Black Spruce Brewing in Fairbanks has been winning medals left and right with its Voracious Tendencies barrel-aged barley wines. However, the White Whale of Alaska-brewed barley wines is certainly Anchorage Brewing's A Deal with the Devil. This beer has won numerous awards, is barrel-aged for at least a year, and clocks in at over 18% alcohol by volume. Bottles of it are expensive and hard to come by, usually requiring standing in line for hours outside the brewery on its release day. But if you ever get a chance to sample it, I advise you not to pass it up. To say that it is superb is an understatement, and it must be tasted to be believed. Whichever barley wine you choose, remember to enjoy them in moderation, as they are indeed stronger than the average beer. We'll be right back with our last segment here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Well, the holiday season is well and truly upon us, so I've been enjoying lots of holiday brews lately. Here are some that I've been enjoying. Last month, I was raving about the return of Samuel Smith's Yorkshire Stingo Ale. This month, I'm very happy to report that Smith's 2024-2025 Winter Welcome Ale is back on the shelves at Country Liquor in Kenai. This exquisite British ale falls in the broad style known as a winter warmer. It's been brewed for over 30 years and is a malty treat for a cold winter's night. Another returning treat is Midnight Sun Brewing's Kohoho Imperial IPA, the brewery's winter seasonal and one of my personal favorites. It's a more muscular version of their Sockeye Red IPA with a hefty 8% alcohol by volume and 85 IBUs. The folks at Midnight Sun achieve the increase in strength by adding fun stuff such as brown sugar, maple syrup, honey, and juniper berries. The same hops are used, Centennial, Cascade, and Simcoe, but at a more generous rate to balance the heftier grain bill. The end result is an exceptional beer with a wonderful mouthfeel and a massive hop bitterness and aroma. The beer is a wonderful drink on a long, snowy evening by the fire. The big change this year is that instead of being offered in 22-ounce bottles, Kohoho is in 4-packs of 12-ounce cans. As much as I used to enjoy the Bombers, I have to admit that the smaller cans are a bit more manageable for solo drinking. It's available at Fred Meyer in Soldotna. Also back on shelves is Sierra Nevada's Celebration Fresh Hop Ale. Back in the early days of American craft brewing, this seasonal release from Sierra Nevada was eagerly awaited and greatly sought after. While it's no longer particularly unique, there are lots of hoppy ales on the shelves these days, it's still an excellent beer and one worth savoring for its connections to the earliest days of American craft beer. You can find it in almost any package store that carries Sierra Nevada products. I'm working my way through a 12-pack of cans and greatly enjoying them. Finally, I got to try a can of Black Spruce Brewing's Long Nights Imperial Stout. The version I tasted had been barrel-aged in rye whiskey casks. The folks at Black Spruce in Fairbanks continue to display masterful skills in brewing big beers and then barrel-aging them to perfection. I expect this brew to bring them another medal at the Alaska Craft Brew and Barley Wine Festival next month. It clocks in at 15.2% alcohol by volume, so it must be consumed carefully. I picked up mine at La Bodega in Anchorage, but I haven't seen it for offer anywhere on the peninsula. Well, that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. Our final quote of the month comes from the chairman of the board, the late, great Frank Sinatra, who said, "I feel sorry for people who don't drink. When they wake up in the morning, that's as good as they're going to feel all day." May each and every one of you have a happy new year. Until next time, cheers.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier, beer.